After this, I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority, and the earth was made bright with his glory. And he called out with a mighty voice, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. She has become a dwelling place for demons, a haunt for every unclean spirit, a haunt for every unclean bird, a haunt for every unclean and detestable beast. For all nations have drunk the wine of the passion of her sexual immorality, and the kings of the earth have committed immorality with her, and the merchants of the earth have grown rich from the power of her luxurious living." Then I heard another voice from heaven saying, "Come out of her, my people, lest you take part in her sins, lest you share in her plagues. For her sins are heaped high as heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. Pay her back as she herself has paid back others, and repay her double for her deeds. Mix a double portion for her in the cup she mixed, as she glorified herself and lived in luxury. So give her like measure of torment and mourning, since in her heart she says, 'I sit as a queen, I am no widow, and mourning I shall never see.' For this reason, her plagues will come in a single day, death and mourning and famine, and she will be burned up with fire, for mighty is the Lord God who has judged her. And the kings of the earth, who committed sexual immorality and lived in luxury with her, will weep and wail over her when they see the smoke of her burning. They will stand far off in fear of her torment and say, 'Alas, alas, you great city, you mighty city Babylon, for in a single hour your judgment has come.' And the merchants of the earth weep and mourn for her, since no one buys their cargo anymore, cargo of gold, silver, jewels, pearls, fine linen, purple cloth, silk, scarlet cloth, all kinds of scented wood, all kinds of articles of ivory, all kinds of articles of costly wood, bronze, iron, and marble, cinnamon, spice, incense, myrrh, frankincense, wine, oil, fine flour, wheat, cattle and sheep, horses and chariots and slaves, that is, human souls. The fruit for which your soul longed has gone from you, and all your delicacies and your splendors are lost to you, never to be found again. The merchants of those wares who gain wealth from her will stand far off, in fear of her torment, weeping and mourning aloud. Alas, alas, for the great city that was clothed in fine linen and purple and scarlet, adorned with gold, with jewels and with pearls. For in a single hour all this wealth has been laid waste. And all shipmasters and seafaring men, sailors and all whose trade is on the sea, stood far off and cried out as they saw the smoke of her burning. What city was like the great city? And they threw dust on their heads as they wept and mourned, crying out, 'Alas, alas, for the great city where all who had ships at sea grew rich by her wealth, for in a single hour she has been laid waste.' Rejoice over her, O heaven, and you saints and apostles and prophets, for God has given judgment for you against her." Then a mighty angel took up a stone, like a great millstone, and threw it into the sea, saying, "So will Babylon, the great city, be thrown down with violence, and will be found no more. And the sound of harpists and musicians, of flute players and trumpeters will be heard in you no more. And a craftsman of any craft will be found in you no more. And the sound of the mill will be heard in you no more. And the light of a lamp will shine in you no more. And the voice of bridegroom and bride will be heard in you no more. For your merchants were the great ones of the earth, and all nations were deceived by your sorcery. And in her was found the blood of prophets and of saints, and of all who have been slain on the earth."
On the morning of her maiden voyage, she was the largest passenger ship on the face of the earth. The designers had purposefully given up speed, for there was a contest to see who could make the fastest route between England and New York. They gave up speed for luxury, and aboard her were quite a list of millionaires. The accommodations were extravagant. To read a list of the design issues that went into the building of the Titanic. It's amazing. She set sail on April the 10th, 1918, and she fell victim to her own propaganda. Her apparent invincibility contained the very seeds of her own downfall. Here we have, as the Titanic, so the city of Rome. In this chapter, we have a succession of speakers who explain the importance of the prostitutes' desolation, picking up on the imagery used in chapter 17. She is deserted by the very beast whose power gave her her luxuriant lifestyle. The beast that had once supported her now disowns her. The chapter comes in four parts. The first three verses, we have the fall of Babylon predicted. That's followed by the people of God exhorted in verses 4 to 8. Thirdly, in verses 9 to 19, the longest part of the chapter, we have the fall of Babylon lamented. The chapter concludes, fourthly, with, again, the people of God exhorted, verses 20 to 24. Notice with me, first of all, then, the fall of Babylon predicted, verses 1 to 3. And this, we have two parts here. Verses 1 and 2, we have an announcement of judgment. And then in verse 3, the cause of it. Notice with me then the announcement of judgment. We have an angel coming down from heaven with great authority. He is radiant with light, common in the book of Revelation for angels appearing. And he appears and describes the eerie desolation that has replaced the former vibrant life of the city. Now reaffirming the verdict that was given already in chapter 14, verse 8. Her smoldering ruins are now a haunt. Notice the description there in verse 2. She has become a dwelling place for demons. A haunt. A haunt. A haunt. I was looking over this. Remembered a movie that Frost and I watched. Some of you may be interested in Stonehurst Asylum. It was released a year or so ago, and actually last fall. It's built on a short story by Edgar Allan Poe. Has a nice twist or two in the story. It's listed in the horror genre, but it has nothing of the blood spew and dismemberment or supernatural elements in our day. No, it's the old understanding of the genre of horror. There's a scene in which a doctor who has just come to the asylum is wandering throughout the asylum unaccompanied. He's wanting to see, he's fishy, something's going on there, and so he's looking. He goes downstairs and he enters into this area, very dark, damp, shadows here and there. I wouldn't want to go in myself, but he's more adventuresome, and he walks in, and you get this feeling of this is a haunt of creatures unseen. And in the blinking of an eye, they all come out, reaching their arms, grasping through the bars that jail them. A haunt, a haunt. This glorious city, the greatest city on the face of the earth, has become a haunt now. A haunt for every unclean spirit, a haunt for every unclean bird, a haunt for every unclean and detestable beast. But why? Why? What is the explanation for that? The cause of such judgment that this city would be turned upside down and made smoldering ruins. Verse 3 gives that. Notice the connecting word for. And then three groups are listed. For the nations have drunk the wine of the passion of her sexual immorality. The kings of the earth have committed immorality with her. And the merchants of the earth have grown rich through the power of her luxurious living. Three reasons here in verse 3. The language is very similar to what we saw last week with the imagery of prostitution and sexual immorality. Again, the word porne, we get our word pornographic, pornography, is used here for sexual immorality and immorality. And the imagery, again, of being drunk with it, this cup of passion. And there it's the wine of the passion. It's the Greek word for heat, the thumos. We get our thermometer registers the heat in the body. And this heat-filled, passionate immorality is the picture. Just as a prostitute will get clients drunk or high in order to involve them in sexual immorality, so the great city of Rome entwined the nations, the merchants, kings of other lands, entwined them in the web of her power through the intoxicating effect of what? Commercial prosperity. Come join in our wealth. We will share it with you. It's interesting that the counselor, the philosopher counselor to Nero and his family, that's a contemporary with the churches, isn't it? Nero, let's see, get my note here. Nero wondered if nature had given the Romans such insatiable appetites that they should outdo, this is a quote, outdo the hugest and most voracious animals in greed. Greed. Even a secular philosopher, this guy's not a Christian, but he's stunned by the voracious greed of the city of Rome. See, we've talked about the Pax Romana, the peace of Rome. What did that offer? What are the economic fallout from that? Well, you don't have to worry about pirates and bandits. All your commerce, your ships, your wagons laden with gold and silver may travel safely. Commerce prospers. There's economic stability because there's political stability. Of course, that is enforced by the sharp edge of the swords of Rome's legions. Rome provided security and prosperity for her friends. Only if you get in step, you see. Only if you accommodate yourself to the worship of the emperor who is in charge of the world, then we'll include you. You know which of the provinces was the wealthiest at this time? Guess which one? Asia, where these seven churches are. The wealthiest of all the Roman provinces. Well, here's the fall of Babylon predicted, the announcement of judgment and the cause. Notice with me then that's followed. Secondly, verses 4 to 8, the people of God are exhorted. We have a call and reason to separate in verses 4 and 5, and then the nature and basis of judgment, verses 6 to 8. Notice the call and reason to get away from them, verses 4 and 5. Come out. Come out of her, my people, lest you take part in her sins, lest you share in her plagues. For, we have a word of explanation for the reason to come out. For her sins are heaped high as heaven. God has remembered her iniquities. The come out there in verse 4 is not literally a physical departure, though it may have included that. It is rather, dissociate yourself from the idolatry and the materialism of the empire. Separate yourself from that. See, the churches in Thyatira and Laodicea failed to keep their distance from the power-driven, pleasure-crazed value system of the culture. They were lulled into complacency by their prosperity. They were willing to compromise in order to gain the favors offered by the harlot. They were enticed. The reason is given. The reason to come out is there in verse 5. Notice again the connecting word, for her sins. Her sins. The sins of the harlot, the great prostitute of Rome. They're stacked up. And this simile, they're high as heaven. High as heaven. Of course, this is, the language is hyperbolic. This is hyperbole. But it's effective. It's for a reason, you see. Those churches that had been lulled to sleep needed this poetic exaggeration to get them to see what was going on. You want to take part in a city whose sins reach to heaven? Do you want to be included in that? Only then could the complacent be made to see, of course, by God's Spirit, come out, for her sins are heaped high as heaven. Then verses 6 to 8, we have the nature and basis of judgment. Now, this does us good. You know, we talk about and have we have these visions and pictures of the judgment of God and wrath and all that. But practically, like, what does it look? When God pours out wrath on anything or anybody, you know, are my visions, my pictures I have in my head, are they parallel to what the Bible says? Well, we get to see this in verses 6 to 8. The nature of God's judgment is that of payback. Perfect equity. Pay her back. How? As she herself has paid back others. Pay her double for her deeds. Mix a double portion for her in the cup she mixed. As she glorified herself and lived in luxury, so give her a measure of torment and mourning. God will pay her back as she has paid others back. An exact equivalent. God is keeping score, you see. We can but imagine what awaits those who have killed God's people just since the last time we met. There's a new video up now of 20 Coptic Christians beheaded at once in Libya. They went there to find work because the economy in Egypt is devastated. So they went to neighboring Libya just to work. The nature, payback. Payback. The basis of it at the second part of verse 7 through verse 8. Since, there's the word begin. Since in her heart she says, I sit as queen, is the feminine form of the Greek word king, you see. I sit as queen. I am no widow, and no mourning shall I ever see. There it is. Her pompous claims of earthly domination and eternal glory will one day, once and for all, be silenced. God will see to it. Her delusion of affluent security will be taken, verse 8, in a single day. A single day. Do you remember a chapter or two ago when we looked at this language that is often used in the Bible of the divine warrior? He is so powerful, he is so invincible, that when he engages his enemies, he devastates them in a day. It's not a war. It's not a series of battles. It's one battle. It's over and done in a day. This language again, for this reason, verse 8, her plagues will come in a single day. Death, mourning, famine, burned with fire. It's interesting things you find, graffiti in digs of ancient cities. And there's an elegant home in Ephesus has been found, and there was graffiti apparently at the time of the last earthquake or the last fire or invasion when the house was destroyed. And on the side of this wealthy family's home, they found these words, "Rome, queen over all, your power will never end." It's haunting graffiti, isn't it? Right from John himself, it seems. Well, what's the reason? What can guarantee that this will happen to the invincible armies of Rome and the mighty empire? Who would have such power, the ability to carry this out, to bring such devastating judgment? Notice the last line of verse 8. "For mighty is the Lord God who has judged her." What's the fundamental theme of all apocalyptic literature? The kingship of God. Over and over again. Perhaps the greatest expression, some have said, of kingship is that of final judgment. Judgment. And here we have that theme. Music again and again. "For mighty." Who can bring this about? Guarantee it? With divine certainty? "For mighty is the Lord God who has judged her." Well, that brings us then, thirdly, to the fall of Babylon lamented. Now, it has already been predicted in the first couple of verses. Now it is lamented. Verses 9 to 19. And at this point, three groups of mourners appear, each standing some distance away from the fallen city, watching the smoke curling up from its smoldering ruins. The mourners include, you see, the close associates of the harlot city. Unlike the harsh voices of judgment heard so far, these groups display grief at Babylon's downfall, offering eulogies that list the many splendors of the late great city. A number of these passages in the Old Testament, the book of Isaiah, has an entire chapter on the fall of the city of Tyre. There are three chapters in Ezekiel, especially you might want to look at Ezekiel 27 after this, where the three groups that now lament Rome would lament the city of Tyre and her demise. We could spend a lot of time on this. I'm just going to go through it quickly. But notice the first group, the kings of the earth, verses 9 and 10. The kings of the earth. And how are they described? Well, they committed sexual immorality and lived in luxury. The porne in the midst of prosperity. They weep and wail when they see the smoke. They stand far off. Alas, alas, you great city, mighty city Babylon. And notice, in a single hour. So great was her fall, it seemed like it took place in a single hour. Your judgment has come. So the kings lament her. That's followed by the merchants of the earth, verses 11 to the first part of verse 17. Notice verse 11, "The merchants of the earth weep and mourn." And why? Since no one buys their cargo. Their lament is purely self-centered. I've got all these wares to sell. There's no one to buy. The length and nature of the specifics are striking. There's enough information. We could actually have a separate study simply on these items now listed in verses 11 to 13. For the most part, they're composed of luxuries. The list is composed of luxuries, not staple goods. There's no cornbread and potatoes here, you see. Nothing like that at all. For these goods were intended for the wealthy. Notice the last one mentioned here, human beings. mentioned on a list, underscoring the brutality of a commercial system that would reduce people to trade items like wood and livestock. I was reading an account of the Nuremberg trials of the Nazi criminals at the end of World War II, and some of the language that they used in the prison camps. The commandants refused to call their prisoners persons or people or human beings. They called them canned goods. Stack them up and use them. They're just canned goods. Much the same we see here. If you've seen, Spartacus with Kirk Douglas? I think it came out about 1960. Or more recently, 40 years later, Gladiator. Those films capture well the trade and marketing of human beings. In Roman times. It's amazing. Rome provided a profound peace in that area of the world. There were neither wars nor battles within their boundaries, nor great robberies, nor piracies. And the philosopher that was a contemporary of John wrote that one may travel at all hours of day or night and sail from east to west without fear. The first century Roman geographer Strabo expressed gratitude for, quote, the present peace because all piracy has been broken up and hence sailors feel wholly at ease. Those things have economic outcomes, prosperity. Economy flourishes. But see, the thing about it is that it was difficult to avoid emperor worship because it pervaded all areas of Roman society, especially commerce. I mentioned two examples. The principal Mediterranean port for Palestine that has been uncovered. And you know what they found? Get off your ship. The first building you see is a temple to the emperor. And before you can take care of your wares, you've got to go there. And you've got to sprinkle your incense and get your token, the mark of the beast. You get your token that you've worshipped the emperor before you can do any commerce. Guess what they found in the ruins of Ostia, which was the principal port for ancient Rome? At the mouth of the Tiber River, they found a large building for priests, for which a set of worship rituals, the emperor. You see, John understood how pagan rituals and emperor worship pervaded the imperial economy. If you were going to do business, if you were going to flourish, you had to buy into it and take your part. You had to drink that wine of the heat of immorality that the harlot would offer you. You had to drink it. Some of the churches were already sipping. The third group that follows, the merchants of the earth, that of the mariners of the sea, at the end of verse 17 through verse 19, notice the end of verse 17, and the shipmasters. Oh, notice at the first part of verse 17, as the merchants of the earth finish their lament, they say, for in a single hour, all this wealth has been laid waste. Then come the shipmasters, seafaring, sailors, so forth, and their lament. And it's basically self-pity again. Losing the city, you see, meant losing a lucrative business partner. In weeping for her, they're basically weeping for their own bank accounts. They're being diminished. Well, we need to move along. There's the fall of Babylon lamented by the three groups. In the fourth place, and finally, we have the people of God exhorted yet again in verses 20 to 24. We have a call and a reason to rejoice in verse 20. And the nature and basis of the judgment coming. Notice the call to rejoice. Verse 20. Rejoice over her, O heaven, you saints, apostles, prophets. Why? Why should we? For God has given judgment for you against her. They should rejoice. The judgment will be sudden, momentarily startling, but rejoice. They get their payback, you see. It's a Christian thing to rejoice here. We are so, our culture affects us, doesn't it? That's not politically correct to rejoice at judgment, is it? And yet the angels that come with this message to the seven churches say, yes, that's the appropriate response, is gladness. Gladness at the fall and destruction of Rome. For God has given judgment for you against her. The nature and basis of the judgment, verses 21 to 24. We have this symbolic action of a mighty angel picking up a large millstone, you know, would be used to grind wheat, and throws it into the water with violence. Excuse me. And so we have that action. Then it's interpreted at the second part of verse 21. So will Babylon the Great be overthrown with violence and will be found no more. Then we have this interesting list of the practical loss. It begins with sound, the absence of sound. The sound of harpists, musicians, flute players, trumpeters will be heard no more. Craftsmen will be found no more. The sound of the mill will be found no more. The light of a lamp, no more. The voice of the bridegroom and the bride, no more. The repetition of the no more, no more, no more. Just thinking about this, the loss of sound, that things would be so quiet. I think I've mentioned this before, not sure where, but I remember a couple of years ago, and it was in the time of year when we have the red-tailed hawks come through, and they run into our cars, and we see them on electrical lines. Went home for lunch, and Frosty was in the backyard, and we try to pay attention to the birds in our neighborhood, and especially the songbirds. Stepped out there just to greet her before I got lunch, and I was taken back. Something was wrong because of how quiet our backyard was. Now, there was background noise. You can hear traffic, that sort of thing going on. But this was eerie. And you think, my first thought was something has happened. The next moment, there's like an explosion in the top of a myrtle tree in our backyard. And out of the leaves, there was a flutter of wings, and a red-tailed hawk emerged with a dove in its clutches. That's why our backyard was so quiet, because a predator was there. All the songbirds, everything smaller, was quiet because their lives were in danger. here. There's no sound of harpists, musicians, no voice of bridegroom and bride. The ultimate reasons for that at the end of verse 23. For your merchants were the great ones of the earth, and the nations were deceived by your sorcery. There's our pharmakeia word we saw a couple of weeks ago. Deception through pharmacy. In her, especially, please notice this, verse 24. In her, that is in Rome, was found the blood of the prophets and the saints. Tacitus, the Roman historian that was a contemporary with John, wrote that the peace of Rome was stained with blood. How is the peace of Rome enforced? Brutal slaughter. The Roman legions knew it well. But they also slaughtered God's people. And God said, that will bring an end to you. Two lessons quickly. Possession of wealth is not the reason for God's judgment on Babylon. Hear me? Possession of wealth is not the reason for God's judgment on Babylon. The cause lies rather in the arrogant use of it and the trust in the security that it brings, which is tantamount to idolatry. That's why. That's the difference. The seductive power of wealth is diffused here by showing its ultimate insecurity and final end. Like those who traveled first class on the Titanic, with its unparalleled grandeur and comfort, those who trust in this world are traveling on a comfortable one-way trip that ends in death. When Augustine was writing his great City of God to explain why Rome would fall as it did in 410 to Alaric and his Goth army, at the end of it, he writes, what does it mean to come out of her? He answers, we must renounce our rights as citizens of this world and flee to God on wings of faith. The call is for us as well to separate ourselves from the idolatry that pervades commerce, our prosperity, and fly to God as our ultimate trust.